Hey, welcome to another episode of Motherhood in Hollywood. This episode is sponsored by BumbieBox. BumbieBox is an eco-friendly toy subscription service. What that means is every month in the mail, you will get a box of toys that are perfectly chosen just for your child. And all of the toys inside each BumbieBox are fully sustainable. That means there's no harmful chemicals or plastics in the toys, which is a really comforting thought when you're a parent looking for the perfect toy to let your child play with. Go to BumbieBox.com right now, enter the code MIHOOD at checkout, and you'll get 10% off your order. Go to BumbieBox.com. BumbieBox is a better way to play. Motherhood in Hollywood is also sponsored by Up4 Probiotics. Up4 Probiotics has been making probiotics and only probiotics since 1979. You guys, that means they know what they're doing. I am so excited to have probiotics in my life, and also I'm giving it to my daughter because they make kids cubes. They're kids cube probiotics that can help your child with their any digestive issues. I know they've helped Channing with some of her digestive issues, so it's really been a game changer for us. Go to up4probiotics.com right now to find out the different variety of probiotics that they have to offer, from children's to senior citizens. That's up4 probiotics.com. And they're also available in your local Target store. That's right. Next time you're out shopping, super easy. Just pop by the vitamin and nutrition area and check out Up4 Probiotics. They've been creating a happier inside since 1979.
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Motherhood in Hollywood. I'm Heather Brooker. You've landed at the best party on the planet. That's right. That's Motherhood in Hollywood. Not drinking. Want to be drinking. It's a Friday afternoon, and I'm behind schedule on doing everything with Motherhood in Hollywood, per usual. I don't know if you guys have been looking at the blog lately, but I'm trying to start ramping it up. I'm ramping up the writing over on Motherhood in Hollywood. I find that I have so many ideas and so many things I want to say that honestly, it's overwhelming sometimes. And then I don't do anything. I just kind of go, ugh, I'm just too tired. I don't want to write any of it. Plus, also as somebody who is a writer and has a very public website and blog, I tend to kind of go, I don't know if people really care about this. Like, why would I write about this mundane, something that's seemingly mundane, but kind of funny to me? I don't know if people would be interested. It's been kind of fun talking to a lot of other writers and mom bloggers and, you know, who are kind of just like, you know what, though? You got to just do it anyway. You got to get your words out there, your voice out there, just for your own creativity's sake and your own creative juices to flow. But also, who knows? Somebody might read it and they might relate to it and think it's interesting. Like, I wrote an article this week about how I freaking peed my pants the other day. I'm literally, my face is getting red right now just thinking about it. I had gone out to have a couple of drinks for a friend's birthday, my friend Will's birthday. And I was hanging out talking, literally just had like two beers. And we got up to say goodbye. And I was like, oh my God, I love you guys. Happy birthday. And I was walking to my car and I thought, I gotta pee real bad. Should I go now? No, I'll make it. I mean, I'm almost just literally like less than 10 minutes from my house. The pain that I was experiencing on the way to my house, because the pee hit and it hit hard and I was like, I'm not going to make it. And I ended up just sort of like busting through my front door and like screaming, I'm peeing, as I'm like running to the bathroom. I have never thought that I would experience such a floppy bladder at this point in my life. I mean, I assume when I'm older that I would have this issue. But if I'm having this issue now, what is going to be happening when I'm in my like 60s and 70s? I feel like it's just going to be like an open sieve. Like just everything's just going to fall right out of me. So gross. Welcome to the show. I want to tell you quickly, my guest today on the show is Jenica Swartzman. She is a mom and a producer and an actor, and she started producing because she decided, like so many people are now, just to take this town by the reins and just start creating her own content. And she started making her own indie films. She and her husband have a production company, and she talks about the indie world and the challenges she's faced and the obstacles she's overcome. And it's a really great story for anybody who's interested in producing and writing and creating their own movies. We talk a lot about TV here on Mother in Hollywood, but hey, I love movies too. We got to make movies too, right? I'm ready to be in Bad Moms too, if anyone's interested. If you know a guy, I'm ready. I also quickly want to say hi to new followers over on Twitter. I know you guys are like, oh, good. Stop doing this. I have to. I want you all to feel the love. I want you guys to feel involved. I want to say hi to Tina Thompson. Thank you for following and finding me and enjoying the show. And I also want to say what's up to, have I already said hi to Despina, to Misfit underscore mom? If I haven't, hello, welcome, and thank you for following me. I also want to say hi to Lisa Cook at Kids Swim LA. Thank you so much for finding Motherhood in Hollywood. Appreciate ya. A lot of exciting and funny and ridiculous things happening over on Twitter. If you don't follow me over there, go to MIH Podcast, where you can check it out. Go to my website, Motherhood in Hollywood, where you can see all of the silly things that I'm talking about that I'm writing. I also have been writing recently for mom.me. That's such a thrill for me because they are such a big website that connects exactly or connects with a lot of the people that share similar stories as mine, silly fun moms. So they're letting me write. They're letting me go over there, letting me write some crazy things. So go and check that out if you get a chance. What else is happening? So, okay, this is really exciting. Next week, the next episode is going to be my one year anniversary of doing Motherhood in Hollywood. And it's been a whirlwind of a year, to say the least. And I'm going to talk a lot more about that in the next episode. But just know I have some fun things planned. And I have a very special guest that's coming on the show. I cannot wait to share that with you guys. So be on the lookout for that. If you haven't subscribed yet to Motherhood in Hollywood, please do that. It would mean the world to me. And then if you have friends who might also enjoy the show, share it with them. Alrighty, that does it for my mommy monologue. I'm going to wrap it up and let you guys listen to my interview with mom, producer, actress, writer, Jenica Swartzman. People call you Jenna a lot?
No. I only get Jenica. I think once people understand Jenica as like Jessica with N's, they don't want to like mess with it and just be like Jen, because I'm making you do the work of learn the name anyway. So
yeah.
Even like my brothers, they still say Jenica most of the time.
So nobody says Jen or Ika?
No. For fun.
No.
Just Jenica. Like anything's for fun, but like in general, people call me all Jenica.
So we're talking to Jenica today about her birth story. No. See, what I do is I get you comfortable. You spill your beans and then I go, we're done.
And I'm like, coming in. I wasn't even thinking.
That's so fantastic though. I am shocked that a doctor would not have been like, hey, we need to get this baby out.
They did. And I said, no.
Oh, you were, resisting.
Because there was no reason. They did non-stress tests every 2 days to make sure everything was fine. And they had no medical reason. And we did inductions and none of them worked.
Oh, so you were feeling like Mother Nature then was telling you it's not time.
It's not time. Like we did the balloon. We did the everything. I've done everything on the list. I've had the salad 3 times. I've drinking an entire bottle of disgusting, horrible things like castor oil, everything. And I've gone down to 2 minutes of active labor multiple times and then stopped.
Wow.
And it wasn't time. And we were out of amniotic fluids.
But
so
the baby was not in distress and they weren't worried at all that the baby was.
No, they were confused.
I'm sure.
But that was it. But nobody was actually concerned for the baby's health until the last induction, our last day, because we signed out of the hospital and went home against their wishes again. And we finally went in and was like, well, there's no more fluid. We have to get the baby out today. So we'll do Pitocin. And I'm very much against overuse, but this is the purpose it was made for.
Right.
So we sat there and we did one drop, and my uterus contracted and the baby's heart stopped because there's no fluid. The blood couldn't flow to the baby if the baby's squished.
Yeah.
So they had to stop. And the doctor was so nice and said, I know you wanted like a natural birth and we wanted to do that, but we have to do a C-section. I was like, yes, get the baby out now.
Like
health is of the concern. It was never a concern before. And they said, actually, it's not an emergency. So we're going to like get the baby's heart back and then just leave him inside you for 8 hours. Until we're ready to like cut him out. So his heart stopped twice more that day.
Oh my gosh.
One drop of Pitocin was too dangerous for us. But we knew that
terrified
somehow.
Or?
Oh yeah. Watching your baby's heart monitor with like fear for 8 hours straight. Like,
oh my
I hope
God.
Everything's cool. They'll cut him out in a second. But the doctor afterwards said, I asked her like what type of stitching she's doing. I like grilled her. She said it's literally the easiest C-section she's ever done. Mm-hmm. I lost the least amount of blood she's ever seen that she didn't know was possible.
Yeah.
So I think my body was ready. Everything was fine. They had to like yank him out. Mm-hmm. And she said my womb was dry and black.
Oh, God.
And she's like, I've never seen that before. And I was like, of course, why would you ever seen that?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
horrible.
Why did they think that happened? Because you had gone past your due date for so long, or?
Yeah. My placenta had crystallization, so they know that the baby was past due. Some research into it over the years, my chiropractor and I have discussed it. She has discussed with me the possibility that I've done a lot of egg donations in the past, and the research hasn't caught up. 6 different egg donations.
Wow, okay.
The research hasn't caught up with the science to figure out what causes what, but some women have extra scar tissue inside that may contribute to them being unable to finish and get through active labor and have their babies anyway other than C-section.
I've read about that. Yeah, okay.
And that's relatively new, and we think it could have something to do with it, or it didn't have anything to do with it, and my son didn't want to come out. And he's fine. And then when it was like a health issue, we cut him out, and he came out very easily. He came out plump and beautiful, like a 1-month-old.
Aww,
we will say he smiled 2 weeks after he came out, so we knew he was a
ready.
Month and a half.
Oh my goodness! Well, I'm glad everything turned out okay. I have a feeling though that you're probably I can already tell that you told those doctors like, no, we're not doing this. So you're probably like that in other areas of your life too.
Yes.
Are you kind of like the controlling lady, the A-type personality?
Yeah. And I'm very holistic and relaxed about things.
Uh-huh.
Like, they kept sending a doula over to my house to just like do relaxing activities, but I had no issue with relaxing because I'm a planner. So I have that like personality that makes me want to like research and plan and make sure we have it, but then I can settle into my intuition and just relax because things are cool. It was scary. I think the hardest thing ever was that me and my husband left the hospital, signed paperwork saying it's our fault, and
it's
have a whole staff of people look at us like we're crazy people, and go home. And I went and got some acupuncture done and took a long bath and like went to sleep early.
But that was something that was obviously very important to you, and
to have the strength to do a real birth.
And
I wasn't fighting anything that was a medical necessity, so that's why we felt comfortable making choices based on what we felt was right at the time.
Yeah.
And it was probably the safest way it could have happened.
Do you think you would do it again?
Oh, yeah. Now you know as a parent that before you're afraid to trust your intuition because it's all your fault and your child's going to die every night they go to sleep.
Right, right.
But once you have a child for a certain amount of time and you have enough confidence built up over the years, there's the feeling of, oh, I'm a mama bear and I know it, and I'm only going to make right decisions for my child against my will even. I'm going to do what's best, and we're going to plan for a home birth for a next baby.
Yeah.
For the same reason that whatever happens, if we can't, either way, we're prepared and we've planned.
Right.
And all outcomes are okay. We've just made sure to go through all the outcomes.
Right.
Options.
All the scenarios. I have several friends who have had their first baby, and they are around a year old or less, and they're going through a lot of those, like, are they supposed to do this? Should they be doing this? A lot of questioning, a lot of self-doubt. And I'm like,
yeah,
I can't reassure them enough. Like, it will be okay. Like, you'll, like, yeah. Cause you don't want to be arrogant and be like, you'll see, you know, I've been there.
Trust me. Like, yeah. And you don't want to, like, take away their feeling of their first time parent right. feelings that they have to go through.
Exactly. But you also, I just also want to be like, trust me, you're going to be fine. Like, it's they all go through these things. I want to talk to you about the area, the industry area, the entertainment area yes. of your life that you like to kind of take things by the balls. Can yes. I say that? Can I say that you'd like to do that?
I do.
Yes. Are you, and you, I read that you've been acting for a really long time, since you were a wee toddler, right?
Yes. My parents raised me in the church, so I've been acting by force a mm-hmm. lot since I was young, and I'm very comfortable on stage and I love theater. And then when I started getting into film and studying acting, I knew that film was for me.
Yeah.
Because you can go so much further and do so much more, and the medium of watching movies and television growing up is just so impactful. Mm-hmm. It's the harmony of everything.
Yeah.
And the stage is a unique experience that you cannot recreate. Mm-hmm. I get that. But not everybody can go to the theater.
Right.
And not everybody can enjoy that. And it is unpredictable, and I love that. But I love doing film. I love producing it now. My husband and I were working as actors and things, and things weren't being finished. Mm-hmm. And movies were just one part. Like, you're a talking prop. Actors yeah. don't matter.
Yeah, no, they don't.
They're the they There's make a big or break misconception everything.
That they do. Yeah, like, I think actors at a certain level, maybe, you know, yeah. once you're the big star, but you're also producing, you also have a hand in the whole production side of it. Those are the actors that opinions matter. But
yeah,
in general, you're plugging a hole, like you're plugging a piece of the puzzle. Well, my friend Tony was saying that last week on our show, like, you're a part mm-hmm. of the puzzle, and find out where you fit. And that's what you do.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating as an actor to be like, but I want to be in the puzzle. Like, just put me in the puzzle somewhere. And what I think is great is that you have sort of turned to producing to be like, I'm gonna make the puzzle.
Yes.
I think that's fantastic. What was the impetus that made you do that? Because there's a lot of actors who are all kind of going, what can I do to take more control of my career?
My husband and I made a short first, and we worked on a web series, and because we wanted to plug in more puzzle pieces and be different types of actors, but still we understood how it worked a little bit. My brother's a director. We had the opportunity to, which not a lot of actors get, act in things and immediately see what it looks like. Act and immediately see and learn on a very fast
pace.
Like,
you would watch on the monitor, like in the dailies?
Or? Yeah, we would watch the dailies. We'd watch the editing cuts. We'd watch beginning to end. And that is an entirely different education
yeah.
for an actor. And if you don't get to see it in real life, not like at a film school where it's, you know, it's in an incubator, but it's not as risky.
Yeah.
But seeing it happen in front of your friends and having web series go public and early web series time and feeling all of those feelings, we learned a lot. But then I was lucky enough, through incredible, ridiculous ways, to be cast as the lead in a film that somebody was making. And I loved working on it. I met great people. And then at the end of the film, my husband and I were like, oh, I can do that.
Right.
Like, oh, I could do that really well. I just saw it beginning to end in somebody else's hands, and every step of the way, I know how I would do it differently for me, and not necessarily better, but for a project that I want to be a part of. So we started content creating. My husband's written before, and we've made things in small ways, and we've learned through editing all of the tricks and how this works as a big puzzle. So let's start from the beginning and write a script and hire and raise money, excuse me, and learn the research and do the crowdfunding and then figure out how many credit cards can you take out in two people's names and how can I do it this way and learn all the SAG stuff. So I loved learning, and it only makes me a better actor.
The money, right? Like, it's
the money's impossible.
There, I read all the stories about Kevin Smith, who, you know, maxed out credit cards and he made Clerks, and that, like, helped him make all the other ones. And there's other filmmakers that have done it too. His stands out in my mind a lot. But whenever I hear of people who are doing that, it terrifies me. I'm like, I can't even pay my shopping credit cards. Like,
yeah,
it's terrible. So I can't imagine maxing out a card and, like, making a movie. But I think, I guess if you're going to do it, that's the way to do it.
I mean, other people we know, our peers, are buying houses.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not.
Yeah.
But we're going to have movies on the shelf at the end.
Yeah.
And it's not a race.
Yeah.
It's definitely a marathon.
A marathon. It is. It is. Because yeah. I think there's a misconception that sometimes when we see somebody who's famous or in the spotlight, that they are just, they just appeared from nowhere. Like, where did this person come from? Where do, you know? But the truth is, most of those people who are really successful actors have been working for a very long time, mm-hmm. and just finally got the right part with the right script at the right time and connected. I think it's fantastic that you're making movies. Now, you've already made one.
I've made eight.
You made eight features? No, I mean, you produced.
Technically, we financed and wrote, my husband and I, and co-produced two features now. The second one is in post-production, but we've produced on several more than we personally wrote.
Okay, yeah. So you're really going for it, like crazy.
Yeah. I get to play this last feature that we shot in January. I got to play a woman who can't have kids, who's struggling with identity, a woman in her 30s who plan A is destroyed and starting over with plan B, and what does that look like? And no one would ever give me this role,
mm-hmm.
because that's just not a nobody type role.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? I hate that you even have to think that, because we as actors are told so many times, who are you? You know, like,
yeah.
you're nobody. Like, I've had people actually in auditions, you know, ask about my social media following. And I'm like, why does that matter?
It should be inappropriate to ask. Yeah. They can look it up themselves.
Yeah, no, Google.
Or it shouldn't matter because it does. Oh, 100%.
But it does. And it's
looked up that stuff when I cast people.
It's so frustrating.
Yeah.
But did you feel like it made a difference in your casting? Did you let it affect your casting choices?
We have, over the last few years, decided and discussed that choosing people based on what they could be and what they have following and all those things are actually the biggest mistakes we've ever made.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, that's interesting.
When it tips the scales. Not mm-hmm. like taking it into consideration, because we always take it into consideration.
Sure.
Like, oh my God, I can't believe your stand-up went so well last night, Joseph. You're yeah. amazing. Let's work on your following. Like, it matters. It
yeah.
helps.
Yeah.
It's engaging. And engaging is real. It's not fake. Fake followers is people that we are hoping will do something for us.
And then they don't.
Because we're not their passion project. This is my yeah. passion project. They're going to do it for their passion project, and they should, because it's their following.
Yeah.
Nobody should be following them for what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm working on something I care enough about that I'm going to make happen. And when it tips the scales over talent, it's an issue. If it doesn't tip the scales over talent, it's fine. I think it's all for grabs.
Yeah. It is definitely becoming, though, a situation where more and more producers and the powers that be are looking to social media outlets to see, or looking at social media following to see who to cast and decide who to cast. I mean, you may have been the best person in the room for a part, but if you have 2,000 Twitter followers and somebody else has 20,000, like, that may be it. And that's such a shame.
We've also felt that the best person in the room is always going to be better in the long run,
mm-hmm.
because if you don't have something to rely on, we have actors that we meet all the time that are hustle and they care and they're passionate, and every passion project that they encounter becomes their passion project.
Right.
And their longevity of attending film festivals with us, supporting us, being a part of the conversation years down the line, giving out the DVDs as gifts to extended family members for mm-hmm. like generations, going to whatever, like, that is so much more interesting and engaging, because one-on-one, face-to-face, is always more powerful.
Right.
It is much better way to get your film's message across, and we like to make movies that have a message, and the message is kind of more important because, again, it's a marathon. I want the messages over the years to add up to an audience engagement with people who genuinely have something at stake. Like, our film promotes a certain amount of identity and understanding of who you are and changing your life and taking control, and promotes adoption,
mm-hmm.
you know, things that we believe in. So those are the people that we want in the long term. And they're not mutually exclusive with social media following.
Right.
But I mean, if I have an actress who we do and we love that will go to every film festival and will meet people and personally invite them to her movie,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of better.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
every person
no,
that
totally
sees
is.
The movie is a better person than somebody who'll share it.
Right.
Once.
Now, how are your movies being received? because it's, you know, I think there's a little bit of, there's a few actors that have done movies that have kind of given us a bad name. Who are like, maybe you guys shouldn't make movies. But how is it going with you guys? Are you finding that you're finding a niche, you're kind of carving out a spot for your production company?
Yeah, it's difficult because each film is supposed to be different. And our first big flagship film that Ryan and I did called Gordon Family Tree, we went with a, according to our sales rep at the time, a middle of the road, very responsible, good reporting distributor. Mm-hmm. We did DVD and digital, and we did an a la carte deal, which is unheard of. And we were actually turned down many times from the DVD distributor about it, to go with a primarily a digital company and then work with another company to do just DVD. And they didn't have digital rights. So they said no three times before they said yes. Mm-hmm. But it was a unique experience of getting it out there. And what we found is that Middle America loved the message of our film. And we had a lot of film lovers enjoy the film, but the message wasn't really for them. It was about doing what you love, and a lot of people that we know in the film industry are already doing what they love.
Right.
They already see the value. And the message isn't necessarily for them. The message is for other people who may be on the edge of what they want to do in life. It's about a guy who travels the America and builds tree houses.
Cool.
Anonymously, and you don't even know till really the end that he's been building tree houses all along, but he goes and he helps people and he learns that carpentry and working with your hands is a valuable skill. And I think that it's a good message for me, and I've watched it, I don't know, 875 times. Every single screener we sent to a festival, I watched beginning to end.
Oh my gosh.
It's my job, and quality control is just on my shoulders.
Right.
It was a great experience because our feedback, you'll see online, like films like, let's say, Inception. Fabulous film.
So great.
People on the internet are not nice, even though I would say arguably a phenomenal film. I could not say anything negative about publicly for real. And people said negative things about us, but we've got really, really, really positive responses that heavily outweigh that.
On the internet. I mean, you know, yes. I've encountered some of that too. And I'm like, calm down. Like, who are you? Yeah. Why do you have the time and the energy to be so hateful online? That just kills me.
There's no reason to spread negativity.
No, absolutely.
Opinions
not.
Are fine.
Right.
But we've found the positivity has far outweighed the negativity that's made us feel really good about what we do. And we've gone to a lot of film festivals and done a lot of research, and watching film festival movies in particular. They usually have a dark, macabre, interesting niche about them, but the filmmaking level might not be as high as it should be for the message they're sending, and it might not be like landing every time. Film festivals that accepted our film loved us and gave us awards because they're like, oh my God, we can get the community to come to this film and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to have a film that has good quality and a good message at this level because it's either like a Disney or it's a big one or it's just a really unfortunate Christian movie.
We are really diving deep into the indie film world in this week's episode. So I want to take a minute to tell you guys a little bit about BumbyBox, our sponsor for Motherhood in Hollywood. BumbyBox.com is where you need to go to find out how you can get eco-friendly, fully sustainable toys delivered right to your door. Each of the toys are play-based. Each box comes with activities and songs. All of them have been especially chosen just for your child. BumbyBox.com is where you need to go to find out more about how you can get your hands on these toys and enter the code MIHOOD at checkout and you'll get 10% off your order. BumbyBox.com is where you need to go. Motherhood in Hollywood is also sponsored by Up4 Probiotics. Up4 has been around making probiotics and only probiotics since 1979. And I don't know about you guys, but for me, if I'm going to use a company or use a product that involves health or the health of my family, I'm definitely going to go with a company that's well established and has been winning awards at what they're doing. And that's what's happening over at Up4. You can get Up4 Probiotics available for children all the way up through senior age. They have a 50 and over probiotic that's specifically designed for senior citizens. They're all made in their state-of-the-art facility, and they've trademarked their super strain. That's pretty amazing. They're super strain of probiotics, so you know they know what they're doing, and also they're backing it up with 40 years of research. Go now to up4probiotics.com to find the probiotic product probiotic product. Say that 10 times. The probiotic product that works best for you. Also, you can find them in your local Target store. Super easy. Next time you're at Target buying your new bikini, pop into the vitamin section and check out all of the Up4 probiotics and find out which one is right for your family. And I want to tell you guys about a special Up4 giveaway that Motherhood in Hollywood is doing. Go to motherhoodinhollywood.com, enter the giveaway, and you could win your own bundle of Up4 probiotics. Doesn't get much easier than that, guys. Go to motherhoodinhollywood.com for details.
Do you think that that's because there are not a lot of indie filmmakers that are, I don't know, I don't want to say not able to make movies, because I know that everybody's trying on some level. A lot of indie filmmakers are trying. I think you actually, you hit the nail on the head with they're all so dark and they're all so edgy. A lot of indie films are that way, or they're just not done very well.
Writer directors, awesome. Often lose all their money on film one because it's a lot of work. And then it's a scrape to do number two when you've learned everything and you should be making
your
film. Including us. And I think it's hard to learn all the things you were supposed to learn and then go public with number two or number three or number four without falling into things that make you want to make your money back, which are pitfalls of specific genres that maybe you're not the best person to tell a story in that genre. Specific sexual activity or things that you're aiming for that help you get money. Actors paying for big talent. There's a lot of issues that I think are battling at this level, which you would think is the opposite. But at this level, you want to make your money back even more because it's yours. Because it's hard to get an investor to give you what you want on a low budget and micro budget level, of course. I'm not talking about independent films like Silver Linings Playbook.
Right. That's a different... I'm tired of people calling those movies independent. Those are not independent films. They're made by massive production companies and
very massive
directors
that came on board at some point, but they all started maybe that way. What was it? Matthew McConaughey, when he won the Oscar, that movie. They were searching for, the writers were searching for 8 years for people to back this film, but they got the script in front of the right people. And that's just amazing. It's just not the journey we're going to be on. And I'd rather make a movie instead of wait 8 years to have a movie, hopefully. And we're very happy with what we're making. We're very proud of what we're making. And we are learning. We are humbled by our experience. Everything I learned on movie one, big movie one, that we just implemented in movie two, it was a very painful experience for me as a producer and star because it is hard to juggle. I'm also a mom now. My heart is in a different place as soon as like the day's over. And I can't fix the things I've already learned because all of the things I already learned can only be fixed with money. And I can put in all the effort and I can make it happen and I can ask for favors and I can get sponsors and I can hustle, hustle, hustle. But the things that I've learned that I need to fix the most are things that are outside of my control. And my husband and I can't put our life on the sidelines for another movie like this because we need other people to step up who have money and who can take a chance on our knowledge and see that we have a portfolio that we can show them the money. We're very transparent. We could say, this is how much money it made. This is how much money it didn't make. This is this is the mistakes we made and these are the good things we did. And for each movie, it will get better.
Are you reaching out to those people now? Are you having those meetings now with people for like development?
Investors are impossible ghosts that are connection only. We have people in Arkansas where we filmed the last two who have connections to people with money because they live in Arkansas. And then we have people in California who are meeting people who are like having meetings. And Ryan and I don't get meetings.
God, that would be so frustrating to know that that exists. You know that that side of the world exists and you're like, I've got to meet with these people in order to try to convince them to give me money to do what I love doing. That's like a business, you know, that's at its core, like that's a business, you know, for people who are trying to start their business and do their business, like, please give me and money to do what I want to do.
Yeah. And we're on Slate and we're on those places to meet those people. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot more people who can talk and they can tell me what I need to fix than there are people who can say, oh, I trust your vision. I loved the script. Yeah, here's $200,000 or $300,000 of my farming money or my whatever money that I have. Because it's easier to work with somebody who wants to be involved in film, who doesn't have a relationship with film in the first place. So finding investors outside of the film world is weird and impossible.
Did you ever see a few years ago, Alec Baldwin did a documentary? Did you see that?
Okay, 95% of your job is getting money. Yeah.
Yeah.
5% is making movies.
Everybody I've asked about that, everyone's like, no, I haven't seen that. And I'm
of course.
It was fascinating watching him go to like these schmoozy parties and like talk to these very wealthy Middle Easterners or like people who really have no connection with the movie business, but beg them for money. And then he talked to all these stars who were like, like it takes a ridiculous amount of begging to get anything made, you know?
Alec Baldwin can't make a movie.
Yeah.
And I have a problem that I can't make a movie, but we can both make movies. We're just going to have to make them differently than you want to.
Right.
Or for somebody else who has money, like the documentary shows 100% is you make deals with people who don't know what they're just in control of something they shouldn't be in control of because they shouldn't be involved in the art and they shouldn't be deciding who you cast.
But
because that's not at all how you make a good movie.
No, but they've got the purse strings. I mean, they're the ones that hold the... Well, I just don't understand why making movies has to be so expensive. Like, you know, I feel like it didn't used to be this way, but...
Oh, but it was so much more for film.
Do you think it was? Like...
Oh, yeah. I think it was impossible before. I think you could make a not good movie before really well.
Yeah.
And probably
the
cheap.
The 80s have proven that. There were lots of bad movies.
But the strict guidelines we have, we had this few issues getting our first film through iTunes' first pass of quality control because a few small things they had issue with that our director was like, well, we could fix that or I can explain to you why it's that way. There were such strict guidelines. And we have another movie we made in 2009 that I love and I have a huge heart for it. And it's in, excuse my brain's gone. It's in 720 instead of 1080.
Okay,
So the distributor who totally was on board and said he'd market it a certain way and he would get out there said, I didn't realize it's in 720. Of course, we can't have that at all. Not a single outlet will take your film. We're like, well, that's not true because we see it all the time. He's like, no, I won't handle that movie. But it's like, but in 2009, that was okay. It just needed to be finished. And now it's kind of a period piece and it's beautiful, but there's nothing we can do about a mainstream distributor, which we're fine.
No.
We're going indie anyway, so we're happy, but those are things that are holding you back, which are advances in technology that happen while you're making the film.
But
an
also
independent film takes
learning.
5 years.
Yeah, and things you're kind of learning along the way. Like, I can't imagine the scope of information and things you have to cover as a producer on a feature film like that.
There are things that are outside of my control, like, for instance, insurance and workers' comp. And SAG requires you to do W-2 payroll, which is insane and silly and doesn't make any sense to me.
If you're not paying your actors? Or
if you're paying your actors, you have to do it that way. If you're not paying your actors, depending on the state you're filming and what the laws are for Arkansas, it didn't matter how we did people who weren't being paid. Because they weren't considered professional actors according to SAG, so it didn't matter. But the laws, and I don't know how a small business ever survives, by the way. The accounting, the quarterly accounting, I'm getting emails every month and mail every month for things that I have to do. And I'm like, but the movie's done and the LLC is still running, but I have to do it this way and I have to pay for an accountant to make sure that I am doing it all right because occasionally something gets done almost right and I fail and I have to pay a fee. And then I have to pay for the residuals, which... an ultra-low budget contract, the residuals are actually, if you do the numbers, actually impossible to do under an ultra-low budget.
Wow,
because
so
if it above the line, or if you can only make the film for $250,000, but you could eventually actually be paid at the end of the day $600,000 for an ultra-low budget, that doesn't cover the accounting for the next 15 years or the 5 years for the residuals.
That it would cost
just
to
the
pay
accounting.
Someone to pay all of the
to do the residuals appropriately.
Oh my
it's
gosh.
Actually physically impossible, though.
Is
I
that
try.
Something you have addressed with SAG? Because I feel I'm always getting emails from them. Like,
I'm getting audited by SAG's health and pension department right now because I got paid the amount that I need for my health insurance.
Oh, wow.
But it's like, but I'm the producer. Yeah. Like, yeah, but it's a red flag. So we need a rough cut of your film. We need, and I was like, no, that's not happening.
Yeah.
We need your script. Fine. We need all of your paperwork all over again. We need this. We need that. And it's like a mile long thing what they need because I'm being audited because I might need health insurance and I'm acting and I am also a producer.
I'm so, that sounds like such a nightmare.
It is a nightmare. So that's why I'm saying oh my costs so much money is regulation, yeah. Which I'm really happy about because as a SAG actor, I'm like, yay, regulation. Yeah. I love being able to pee and drink water.
Right, right.
Yay. I love being treated well and like having appropriate hours. But also when you go to a distributor, it costs you another $2,500 for insurance just to be distributed for errors and omissions insurance.
Oh, geez.
Impossible stuff.
So it's obvious why you want to make more films. No.
Well, I've already learned it, so going. I might as well just keep doing it.
Why not? And you mentioned earlier something about Christian indie films. Is that your genre?
No, not at all. And people think it is.
Oh, really?
Because it's family appropriate content. And we've had...
I assume that it has a message.
Yeah, any type of message that has any type of love or positivity or the word inspirational comes with a faith light quotation around it. Mm-hmm. We went through the Dove approval so that people who are looking for family appropriate content can search us and find our movie, which is, again, like... a huge deal, approved for all ages by the Dove Foundation, is a big deal.
Yeah.
However, that makes you a Christian movie for some reason.
Yeah.
And I am personally a believer, but it has nothing to do with the movies I'm making. And it's actually hurting us that other people, a production company we've worked with, has made it clear to us that they don't want to be associated.
Really?
And that they're having a hard time. And it's not like they're people that are not of faith, but it's actually going to hurt them in the long run with their reputation to making Faith Light, which is not faith films.
Yeah. Family friendly.
Family friendly. And family
I'm
friendly
so shocked
is.
By that because yeah. I feel like there is such an audience for faith based and Christian films.
There is.
I feel like they're just wanting to, you know, support,
it's a huge audience. However,
but that's not your vision.
It's not an appropriate audience for the message because the word family, like there's a few other like this. You can make a film that's horror, that's family. You can make a film that's a drama, that's family. That's comedy, that's family. Family is not a genre. Mm-hmm. However, we've decided that family appropriate content goes under that genre. And there is kids, like when you go through HBO Go, there's kids.
Yeah.
The family appropriate content can go there and it can go in comedy. It can go multiple places. But when you're an independent filmmaker, you have to be pigeonholed really early for your distributor to trust whether or not they can market your film. And the Christian audience has a lot of money.
Yeah.
So if you go that direction, you can get more money. So your distributor is going to do it.
But that's not something you want to do.
No, I'm because I was raised a believer and I was raised in the church. We were raised as people who are living a normal life that is spiritual and that is fluid in all areas of your life. And when you make a film that's evangelical specifically, you're only serving people preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
And I don't want to preach to the choir because I have been most impacted in my life by things that were outside of that realm.
Of your comfort zone and outside of your world.
Yeah. Like Dave Matthews can sing about Jesus and nobody cares because it's Dave Matthews.
Right.
But he can have an impact on the world.
Right.
Through his actual music. And I want to have an impact on the world. I don't want to have an impact on the people who I may or may not have grown up with.
Yeah.
Because it's not why you make movies. I want to make a movie, like if I'm making a movie about a guy who wants to do what he loves for a living, I want to have middle America. Some of them aren't doing what they love.
Right.
They don't live in a big city.
Right.
Very expensive sacrifices. They're not choosing their dreams. They might need a film that's like pushing them in the direction to be like, you're right, working with my hands and being a carpenter is like a really great, wonderful job. I should have pride in what I do. Mm-hmm. And with Parker's Anchor, the second film we just shot that we're in post-production, a message about the second part of your life, the second chapter, our generation is going to go through multiple chapters. My mom's just now being affected by that where, she was in the ministry for 30 years and then, for 10 years I'm going to do this. And then that doesn't work out. I'm no longer in education. For 10 years I'm going to be a music teacher. Mm-hmm. For 10 years I'm going to do this because that's what we are living now.
Right.
And if you're an artist, it's a marathon. But if we lived anywhere else, I would be this for 10 years or 15 years and then you kind of get into a different area and then your needs change and then your family life changes so you can work full time so you kind of like meld into something else.
Was
so,
your mom a preacher?
No, my mom was an associate pastor and worship leader. My dad was the pastor.
I love that. So would you rather would you rather describe your movies, are they more inspirational, or do you really feel like family friendly is kind of what?
I feel like the movies that I want to make over the lifetime of our company, Purpose Pictures, are just going to be films that we feel the message we want to get out, and none of those messages necessarily have to be family friendly or appropriate or curse free or whatever, abuse free. Right, like right. We are open to anything. There will be eventually, I'm sure, nudity and death and murder and action and stuff like that, because I love that too.
Yeah.
There's so much fun. If I want to be put into puzzle pieces, there's so much more fun that I want to have than tame. And it's not realistic to be tame.
Right.
It's not realistic, like you said. Sometimes you have big feelings, and big feelings can only be accompanied by the F word.
Yeah.
Because you can let them release.
Yeah.
And you learn that actually in, I'm sure, Lamaze and different places you learn about birth. That big feelings can be released in different ways. And words have connotations in life. And I don't like certain words. I love other words. And I feel that way about violence and love and romance. It's but a whole
also,
big
as
world.
An that actor side of you, too, also probably is just itching to kind of.
Oh, I can't to wait to murder somebody with not a gun, but like a bat. Something where I can really get.
Just like let it out.
Yeah. You just want to like
every
give
actor
it.
Has that inner, like a little inner crazy that they're just like, give me a character to just kind of play this and then I'm okay.
Yeah. You know? Like I need to do it.
Yeah.
But it won't consume me at the end of the day, but I want to be dangerous because I am dangerous. You're a mom. You know that there's like this weird part of you when you have a kid that you picture your child dying 1,000 ways a day.
Yeah.
Because
what
it's
is that about? It's
evolution
so
because you're trying to protect your child.
I can
see death everywhere.
Yeah. Like
it makes you dark.
Don't go that way. Don't do that. And I constantly in my mind am thinking what are the dangers that were, but I'm not like to the crazy point where I'm like, there's danger around every corner. Like,
no, but you absorb it yourself.
Yeah.
And evolutionarily speaking, like you breathe and dream mm-hmm. death for a long time.
Yeah.
Because you love.
Don't worry about your baby.
Yeah.
So how are you balancing then? And I use the word balance just because I like it. And you may not be balancing, and that's totally fine. But how are you figuring everything out with being a mom and also this production company and wanting to act and all of that stuff? Because it's not easy in LA. And
it's not.
So how are you figuring it out? What's going on?
I think balancing the visual is wrong, but the word is 100% correct. I've got balance tattooed on my back. The funny thing is that it's not balanced the way that it's written, and I love that because there is a season, turn. And there is a season of my child being a baby where he's the most important thing in the world, and I can't do anything else no matter how hard I try.
Yeah.
And there is a season for other things. When I was on set, I couldn't see my son for 12 hours straight. That's the longest I'd been away from his physical body, mm-hmm. my entire relationship with him, and that was difficult, but it was important. Good for him, good for me. It was a season, and then when the movie was over, he was attached to me, and we ruined all of our work before then getting him to be a single human. But we're in that. We're in a constant ebb and flow of he's going to be watched by other people, and he's going to grow and be his own person, and I have to let that go. And then after I'm done letting that go, I can step into the business part of me and actually work and think and remember. And you get your mommy brain, like
right.
working with your real brain. And you can't do two things at the same time that are across, like you can't bipartisan, like your brain. You could either be a mom or you could be an actual hardworking dark artist. It's weird to do it at the same minute.
It's weird to do it at the same moment, for sure. Like, I find that I'm like, okay, I just need you to watch TV for just a couple minutes because I got to go in there and do some. Like,
I got to focus.
I have to focus on a few, like, businessy type things. And she, fortunately, is pretty cool. Like, she'll come in and go, Motherhood in Hollywood. And, she gets it, and she likes to sit down, and she'll pretend to talk into the microphone and, you know, while I'm, like, sending emails or whatever. So it's really cute. And that's how I'm trying to kind of work her into it, but there are moments when I'm like, I really just need you to get out for
yeah.
like a minute, please. But she's pretty chill kid, so I feel pretty lucky that she gets it, kind of. And I think all moms out here are still trying to figure out how can we pursue our dreams and still, you know, make family a priority. And it's hard, and it's an ongoing thing. But it's possible. It's achievable.
It feels better to do it than to not do it.
Do you feel like you're doing it? I mean, because when you're in the middle
yes.
of living it, then
Well, in this moment where we both don't have our children with us, I feel like I'm me. I feel like I want to celebrate all the time. I'm keeping it together. I haven't had any emergency texts, so I feel good. I was at a premiere last week for a film, Ridge Runners, which is a sex trafficking crime drama. I'm the lead detective. Again, somebody might not have given me this role if it wasn't in the independent world. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. Being a cop was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I loved every minute of it. And it was the first time we were out of state and we were with a stranger babysitter. And throughout the movie, my husband's phone rang like 100 times from everybody but the babysitter.
Oh, wow.
So we just kept like every few seconds, look at the phone. Freak out. Okay. Go back to being people again. Freak out. Okay. Go back to being people again. And it's so hard, but
it's certainly, it's an emotional tug for sure. Yeah.
It took away from the experience, but it also added too, because I got to have my son at the after party. Aww, and he got to meet the director's kids. And we have a whole other generation of people who are all in it together. And I grew up in the ministry. So being a pastor's kid, you're always with your parents and you're always doing things with them.
Oh yeah. The PKs.
So you have no life other than like their life, and they're always balancing the two. It's the exact same lifestyle I was raised in. And I feel like it made me a better person. He's great at independent play, all the healthy crap. But also, I started writing for Ms. in the Biz, which I'm very excited and honored about. And I'm writing more articles about being an indie work-at-home parent filmmaker. Because it's such a specific thing. Mm-hmm. Because I wish somebody had written things for me.
Yeah.
And that's why finding this podcast was wonderful. It's like, yes, other people doing it gives you that extra spark and that extra motivation to just keep doing what you're already doing and you already enjoy. But then you feel more confident in it because you're in a community, and community is the difference between life and death.
I'm fascinated by the number of women that I'm meeting, and dads, moms and dads that I'm meeting, who are so in love with being a mom. They're loving it and they're loving being a parent. The best. They also, it doesn't mean you have to give up on the industry. I think maybe 20 years ago, there was, you know, a time when women were being let go from jobs if they got pregnant. But now, if somebody tried to do that, if like, you know, somebody, a celebrity got pregnant, like Mila Kunis just announced they're having their second baby. If a producer was like, no, you're fired, they would be on social media like a heartbeat, and it would just be like, rawr, you know? So I think the tide is turning more in our favor to support family and film life.
Well, what is the most tried and true movie that you know you're going to enjoy when you go to the theater? It's a Pixar film, let's be honest. No. And at the end where it says show babies and they list all the babies.
So cute.
They are people who are juggling family and art at all times. Their job is harder than ours because they're like in it all the time with extremely big, huge projects with lots of like people and
pressure
angles
and a lot of things
lots
on
of
the
pressure
line.
And they make their corporate culture, they make the most wonderful family purpose-driven loving films that are great for most audiences across the world. And it's because they're people.
And they're people.
You have to be a
families.
Full person. Yeah. And some people, having kids is or isn't for them. But for me, having kids is for me. And so I have to be a full person to do my best job. And my son watching me do it does make me do a better job. And it does make me have more integrity.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's such a sweet sentiment. I love it.
Don't tell him I said that.
Yeah, no, don't ever listen. Okay, so where can people find you? Where can they watch all the things you're doing and stalk you on the social media?
It's a great question. Last time when I was listening to this podcast, I was thinking that this is such a hard question for people who have full lives, because Twitter is probably my work life, at Jenica Renee. Jenica like Jessica, JenicaRenee, is where I put things that are like very open. My grandma's not on Twitter, so I could be a lot more of myself. But Instagram is where I am my whole self, because there's a lot of pictures of my son doing things with me.
Right, right.
So I'd say at Instagram it's the same. At Jenica Renee is where I am my full human being self, publicly and okay. And I've decided my grandma's not on there, but my mom is. Facebook is my personal life.
Yeah.
Like, I share lots of personal things and I share lots of public professional things. But That's how I talk to like my grandma and my cousins. And Facebook I'm using as what Facebook's meant for.
Right. But do you have where can people go watch your movies?
Gordon Family Tree is on Amazon. If you want to put it, give a DVD to your grandmother, she's going to love the movie. Or Father's Day. Woo. But there's also all the internet outlets like iTunes, Amazon, everything. Awesome. Hulu, you can watch Gordon Family Tree anywhere. And then we have a few other films that are going to be releasing this year. And Parker's Anchor hopefully will be on all of the above as well. But yeah, I think that's my main one.
Well, and I will also make sure that I put links to that info my website.
I appreciate it.
On Motherhood in Hollywood. Thank you so much for coming by and sharing your story and literally letting me talk to you about everything from your birth plan.
Anytime.
To your movie plan. Like we just ran the gamut.
We're very transparent, Ryan and I, because we think that education is important. Mm-hmm. And I always think being a witness of all you do is important because people can take and not take what they want. And there's no reason for me to be private really about anything, because the things I'm most private about are the things I feel the most strongly about.
Right. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, if you talk about what you want to talk about and what you feel the most comfortable with. So I say, guys, as someone who's interviewing you, I say, get it all out there. And I'm glad you did.
As a podcast person.
As a podcast lady.
The more, the merrier. The more salacious, the better, too.
Exactly. What have you got? No. All right. Well, thank you again for coming on. And you guys, everyone go to motherhoodinhollywood.com. I'll put some information there about Jenica as well. And follow me on Twitter at MIH Podcast and search, of course, Motherhood in Hollywood on Instagram and Twitter. Thank you guys for listening. Jenica, thank you again for coming on the
show. Thank you.
And don't forget, I'm not a perfect mom, but I can play one on TV. Bye, guys. Have a great week.
Mama funny.
Balls.